Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to educating and empowering men to address erectile dysfunction, improve confidence, and enhance the satisfaction in their relationships. This podcast is brought to you by ErectionIQ.com. Learn more at ErectionIQ.com.
Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. I am Mark Goldberg, certified sex therapist. I am deeply passionate about working with men like you to help resolve their ED.
We are here with another episode of the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. Today we are joined by Lainey Givens. Lainey is a recent graduate of occupational therapy with a focus on pelvic health. She practices with Dr. Susie Gronsky, who is a pelvic floor PT in North Carolina. We also had Dr. Gronsky on an episode, and if you haven't heard that, we encourage listeners to check it out. So Lainey joins us today to help us understand more about occupational therapy and its role in addressing sexual dysfunction. So Lainey, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, so to get us started, can you just share with our listeners a little bit just about yourself? And if you could help both myself and the listeners understand a little bit more about what exactly is occupational therapy.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I have my master's in occupational therapy. And then after that, I decided to get a certification in as a pelvic health specialist to further my desire to help people with sexual dysfunction, pelvic floor dysfunction, etc. I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and as you mentioned, I work with Dr. Susie Gronsky. Yeah, that's me. And occupational therapy. So I get this question a lot. I'm happy to answer it. So OT, at its core, is fundamentally holistic. So when we see someone, we're always looking at the big picture, not just physical symptoms or just psychological symptoms, etc. We consider occupations. A lot of times people will say, oh, so you help people find jobs or things like that, which the name, of course, does lend itself to that. But occupations we consider to be daily tasks, activities of daily living, instrumental activities of daily living. So things we do every day, going to the bathroom, getting dressed, having sex, walking your dog, making meals. And we categorize those into, like I said, activities of daily living. So peeing, pooping, and sex, getting dressed, and then instrumental activities of daily living, which is kind of a tier up. It just involves a little bit more from you. Making meals, taking care of children or pets, things like that. And then we also have a strong focus on routines, habits, rituals, and roles. So how do all of these things influence what a person is going through? And how can we modify, adapt, change that to better suit what's going on, to better suit their new lifestyle or new change? So that's occupational therapy in a nutshell.
Yeah. So before we get to anything relating to sex, could you give like a non-sex issue that somebody who comes to see an occupational therapist may be facing in their lives? I think that'll be helpful to our listeners to kind of get a better sense of where occupational therapy comes into the picture.
Absolutely. And I'll take it like totally non-pelvic specific, if that is helpful too. So you have shoulder surgery and you can't get dressed on your own anymore because you can't move your arm. It's immobilized, right? So one thing that OT is going to do is help you learn to dress yourself. So that means adaptive equipment that you might need if, you know, if somebody doesn't have the accessibility to a caregiver or lives alone, things like that. We're going to help you learn to dress yourself, brush your teeth, get out of bed, do those little things that we kind of take for granted that we do every day, relearn how to do those in a different way. A lot of like joint replacement surgeries, things like that, stroke, anything where the body is really affected and we're not able to perform those tasks like you were, we come in and teach you how to do those in a different way.
Okay. Sounds like it could involve both like psychological impediments and like physical impediments that people are looking to overcome. But the focus is on like much more of the outcome, which is person is struggling with a basic daily or multiple times a day function or task. And the job of the OT is to like help them, I guess, figure out what the barriers are, what the plan is to overcome those barriers and develop these routines and habits that would help them to adjust to whatever life circumstances they are facing and be able to accomplish these like important basic, you know, tasks in their functioning.
Beautifully said. Yes. We actually got our start in mental health. So back 1917. So that's kind of where we originated. So there is a strong psychosocial component to occupational therapy as well.
Okay. I could already guess in my head where some of the applications here may be when it comes to sex, just thinking about some of the clients that I work with and how challenging it is sometimes to follow through on some of the things necessary. But I'm not going to jump the gun, and I'm going to ask that a little bit more. How the crossroads between occupational therapy and the pelvic floor or pelvic health, can you speak a little bit to that? And then we can get to some of the sexual dysfunction pieces.
So occupational therapy and the pelvic floor, three things that we consider activities of daily living that I mentioned earlier are pooping, peeing, and sex. So those are some of OT's bread and butter, right? That's what we treat a lot of. Now, that was seen more in other settings, and OT started to question, wait, we're teaching people how to go to the bathroom again. We're the people that are supposed to be talking to, you know, someone who had a stroke, had any sort of injury, about how they're engaging in sex, things like that. Why aren't we diving deeper into pelvic floor therapy and getting specific there? So there is a really beautiful kind of marriage there with these activities of daily living that we are so versed in and the pelvic floor's functions, because that is the pelvic, you know, main pelvic floor functions. To pee, to poop, and to have sex are three big, big functions. So that's kind of my, again, in a nutshell, OT and the pelvic floor.
The specific focus that you have is like around the pelvic floor, which obviously I'm going to split them into two for our purposes, because we're not going to, I don't think we're going to get too deep into pooping and peeing. We're going to focus a lot more on the sex side of things. Okay, so what would be a application that pertains to the pelvic floor? In other words, if you could just kind of present us maybe like kind of like a case study or whatnot of somebody who comes to see an occupational therapist, is having a pelvic floor issue, and it is manifesting in a problem with sex, whether it's pain, discomfort, or a function issue. Like what does this case look like?
Yeah, so this does involve pooping, but we end with sexual dysfunction. So someone comes in with a complaint of chronic constipation, some rectal prolapse, and has been dealing with that for a long time. Now is having sexual pain. So pain with erection, pain with ejaculation. Those two are very much connected. So we're going to treat both, but and I think Susie covered a lot of the pelvic floor, the anatomy and things like that on her episode. But the muscles and nerves, you know, there are nerves that go to the anus, to the rectum, that go to the penis as well. Muscles share that same hammock. So someone that comes in with that, we're going to look at, of course, the bowels, what's going on there, but also and treating that should help the ejaculatory and erectile pain, but that might come later. So what can we do now? And for the erectile pain, penile pain, ejaculatory pain, well, what positions are you in when you're having sex? How, like, what do your hips look like when you're, you know, are you on top? Are you thrusting? What is your masturbatory style? A lot of men that I see talk about how their masturbatory style, as they have learned, is very quick, secretive, and sometimes rough, because it's that quick, secretive thing, because that's how our society kind of perpetuates men's sexual health. But so looking at those things in conjunction with the bowel, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's kind of take this one step forward. So a gentleman comes in, having, you know, constipation, rectal prolapse, and pain during erections or ejaculation, and we discover that, you know, upon, you know, further probing, that he's got this ritual, right, that involves much more intense friction and speed intensity with masturbation. What then happens with OT?
Great question. So one of the first things that I will address is the mindfulness of the activity. So bringing in that kind of psychosocial emotional component of maybe doing some breath work, guided relaxation, so they can note how they feel in the body when they're relaxed. Doing that and then having them try to carry that over into masturbation. Just mindful masturbation.
Noticing they learn the skill of, let's say, mindfulness, like relaxation, and like once that skill is learned or mastered or whatnot, trying to bring that into the arena. Would that effort be to develop almost like a new approach or a new like routine when it comes to masturbation? One that would put, in this instance, I'm assuming, less strain on certain parts of the pelvic floor.
Exactly. And also on the brain. So less stress, less, with the secrecy and the quickness, less nervous system kind of upregulation during this, more of that parasympathetic rest and digest during masturbation. This is not an overnight thing, right? This takes work, this takes time. And maybe we just start with breathing. Can you focus on your breath during masturbation? Partly, can you just tell that you're breathing? Things like that. So sometimes we start small and work our way up.
Okay. So I don't want to be overly presumptive with this, but it sounds to me like while this person may have a pelvic floor issue, some of what they're doing may have been the cause of, or certainly is maintaining or exacerbating, the pelvic floor problems that they're experiencing now. So while they may be seeing a pelvic floor PT or doing some other form of treatment to, let's say, address the actual injury, the OT may be working, I'd say, somewhat on the periphery to help change some of the actions, behaviors, or patterns, and helping the people to learn other ways of being that would hopefully help to calm the already injured parts, but also develop better habits moving forward to avoid re-injury or other future problems.
Exactly. Yes. And I do complete a thorough physical exam as well. That is something that's included in a pelvic floor exam. So external and with consent, external and internal exam.
Is that performed by an OT?
Yes. I'm certified to perform that.
To do that. Okay. Yes. So what are some of the more common sexual dysfunction issues that you see in your practice?
The erectile pain and ejaculatory pain I see, and then a lot of difficulty achieving or maintaining an erection. Some pain with sex, but those that usually happens are kind of coincides with if there's pain getting an erection or pain during ejaculation, there can be pain during sex as well.
Okay. So let's go with an ED case. This is the ED Radio Podcast.
Yes.
So let's kind of talk through an ED case together. So a person comes in, they present, what is the typical like starting point for you of an ED case? Are they having a pelvic floor issue per se, or is it just, I'm having ED and my doctor says it's not anything, that they can identify in terms of like a, standard blood flow issue or whatnot. So there's no major underlying medical issue. Might be something in the pelvic floor, might not be. What happens in an OT evaluation?
Yeah, that's typically exactly how they present. I've been to my doctor. I've tried a couple of things, but they don't kind of like they're not sure what to do. They tell me that it's age and I should get used to it, and I don't know what else to do. So a very broad general presentation. So in an OT evaluation, first and foremost, I'm going to take a thorough history intake. So again, what do your days look like? When we get into sex, what does sex look like for you? One partner, multiple partners, is this situational? Is this happening every time you have sex? Is this happening in every position that you have sex? Is this happening during masturbation? So really trying to get all of the details that I can get. Mm-hmm. In addition to, again, what is your stress level? What does your day look like? What medications are you on? That's a really big one that I've noticed. What medications are you on? And yeah, what have you tried? And I think an important question to ask is, what do you think is happening? That's kind of where we get into that psychosocial component. And that's when a lot of times they'll share more of, well, it can go one of two ways. Either I don't know, that's why I'm here, or it can kind of open up space for them to talk about like the periphery of what's been going on. This happened, and all of these other things are happening in my life too. And the reason that I'm struggling with that is this.
Okay, so I know we're talking on very broad terms because, like, we mentioned a lot on this podcast that, like, ED and anything in the sexual realm, it's so complex and multifactorial. It's very, very nuanced. So I hear the struggle, Lainey, of like how do I present a case, like, because they're all so unique. Like, they're all so unique.
Yeah.
So I hear that. So
Thank you for understanding that. I'm trying to, yeah, explain OT's role in this, but also keep it broad enough because you're right. It's
right.
so multifaceted.
Yeah. And I recognize the struggle because when I'm asked this question of like, well, what do you do? I was like, well, it really just depends on each person that comes in. It's not as simple or formulaic. I mean, we have a way of thinking about things. We have evals, and whatnot, but each person and each situation is unique, especially when you're dealing with the mind. It's very, very unique to each person, each situation. So I can hear the struggle, but I'm going to throw out some details if that's okay with you. And we just kind of get
Sure.
a sense of like what an eval would look like. The gentleman is 47 years old, recently divorced like 6 months ago, and has just re-entered the dating scene. He was diagnosed as pre-diabetic, but after a Doppler test, they revealed no specific blood flow issues, and he reports that he masturbates to plain pornography 3 times a week, and does not experience any sexual pain, but notices that his erections are weaker with masturbation. And recently, after going out on a couple dates, has not been able to get an erection with a partner. Throw
Okay.
it out randomly.
I'll try to go back to the beginning and start try to remember everything. The blood flow, right? The Doppler with the blood flow. Okay, we have that pre-diabetic. Also, we know diabetes is going to affect nerves. So we have to take that into consideration too. So again, every evaluation I'm performing a physical exam and we're doing sensation testing as well to make sure that sensation is intact. In the genital area and surrounding areas. Educating, lots of education on movement and exercise and how that affects nerve health and blood flow. And then the recent divorce, right? So getting into more of that psychosocial component. And that's where I'm going to ask questions like, did this start to happen after your divorce? When did this start to happen? Also, masturbating to plain pornography 3 times a week and not having pain, that's fine. Is that pleasurable for you? Do you feel like you're gaining pleasure from that? Is that enjoyable? What is your, if you had to make like a sexual menu, what would that look like? What things do you like? So really starting to turn the wheels of who are you as a sexual being? And maybe we need to start relearning that after, a divorce, you're with a partner for an extended period of time. Sometimes those things, we don't revisit them as often. So, trying to get them thinking about, even just thinking about getting in touch with that part of themselves and what they like and what's pleasurable to them. And also explaining, in certain situations, you might not get an erection with a new partner. Talking about, the nervousness or the stress or things like that that can surround a new situation can affect erectile variability. And also that it is normal for erections to wax and wane throughout the sexual process. So a lot of education and a lot of kind of questions diving deeper into when, how, where, and what do you like? What do you want?
I can tell already that you, like, anybody in North Carolina, if you're going through this, like, this, like, Lainey definitely gets it. Just I could tell just because like the details matter. And like I try to explain that to like each one of my patients, especially because like we're asking really invasive questions into people's personal lives. And like it's a lot of times we're doing this in a first or a second session, right? Or a first or second meeting. And it's like, I barely remember like how to spell your last name. And like we're already like, you know, ankle deep in like your sexual makeup. And it could be like really, really like hard because it's vulnerable and it is like emotionally invasive and mentally invasive for many people. And I do try to explain to patients that like the more information we have, the more detail, the more accurate and the more pinpointed we're going to be in being able to help you resolve this. So I know that when I speak to people and they're like, well, you know, I just, you know, immediately prescribe X, Y, and Z. Like, that's not the kind of provider that I encourage people to see. These probing questions like are really meant to provide like a super accurate picture and to really create interventions and routines that are really going to be helpful. They're not generic. They are meant to really address somebody's problems. So I really, really appreciate just how thorough you are, even in this like this prompt that I invented, right? But just kind of like just showing that there's so many avenues and angles that one has to go down to really get like a proper understanding and assessment. So I'm not sure exactly how like what you do once, let's say you've completed an evaluation, and let's say there are two or three areas that are sticking out to you. It's like these are pretty relevant areas. Like these seem like they're really, really important. So I'll pick them out if that's okay with you. Let's say you notice this person really is kind of at some point lost their relationship with pleasure. They're almost doing things because they feel like they have to, they should, they don't want to age. So they're just masturbating for the sake of masturbating or whatnot. So one area you notice is around pleasure. Another thing is this person shares with you more information that they really hadn't been sexually active towards the end of their relationship that resulted in divorce. And they are nervous about reengaging with a partner and whatnot. And a physical test reveal that there's a slight decrease in nerve sensitivity. Okay. Where does OT go next? Like what happens on that intervention side?
Yeah. So something I mentioned earlier is that sexual menu. I think that can be really important and to collaborate on that in the sense where sometimes that's overwhelming for someone who, like you said, if they maybe weren't sexual toward the end of their relationship, pleasure hasn't really been on the forefront of their mind in a long time. And that can be overwhelming to just say, make a list of things that you like sexually. So giving them, you know, maybe a list and saying, pick a few of these things and then add a few of your own and kind of working with them on that. So again, they can start to think about prioritizing their self, their pleasure and their self. As far as, so kind of adding in with the nerve and the sensation, adding in maybe lube to masturbation. See, how does that feel? Or a vibrator, even like a vibrator on the inner thighs or around the genitals. Is that arousing to you? Does that feel stimulating? There's also lube that they make for men that is stimulating, like stimulating arousal gel. So trying things like that to see if we can increase some penile or genital sensitivity would be where I go with that and kind of incorporate that into the sexual menu, right? Whatever they might feel pleasurable, can we incorporate those things into that? And then honestly, for someone in that case, I want to check, are they seeing a mental health therapist? Have they thought about that, or a sexuality counselor, a sex therapist? Because there is a line, right, where I can address psychosocial components, but I am not a psychologist. Mm-hmm. So making sure that they do have someone that they can talk to about these things verbally. And I have also referred people to like sexological body workers or sexual surrogates if they're feeling really like apprehensive about receiving or giving touch. Mm-hmm. So again, individualized depending on that person, that might be a recommendation. But those are Those are the first things that come to mind.
Yeah. Do you use the Plissett model?
I don't.
Okay.
We use acceptance and commitment therapy, like the ACT.
Okay. So in the sex therapy world, and I think it'd be helpful for the listeners to understand, I think, because there's a lot of crossover, I think, in the work that you do as an OT and the work that I do as a sex therapist. So we use what's called like the Plissett model, which stands for like permission, limited information, specific suggestions, and the IT is intensive therapy. And I when I'm working with you know clients of mine, like I will let them know that like the limited information and specific suggestions are not the same thing as intensive therapy. And I think that there's other like professions that we work with, like urology or gynecology or OT or pelvic floor PT, where like a lot of what we do may overlap in terms of like making some of these suggestions and changes and whatnot. The intensive therapy, I think, is something that becomes a little bit more unique to the sex therapy world. But I think remarkably, you probably have had this experience too. A lot of times before you even get to the intensive therapy, sometimes just accurate diagnostics and some of these suggestions can be enough to get things moving in a positive direction. And certainly if there's like a performance anxiety or whatnot, sometimes we have to go in and actually address the underlying anxiety, you know, using like therapeutic techniques and a particular approach. But a lot of times, if you can get movement, some of that performance anxiety will actually resolve itself. So I think that we have a lot of overlap in that information and suggestions box. I think where we obviously would diverge, or where our particular expertise would come in, like are the areas like the intensive therapy or like particular physical interventions that would be outside of my purview and whatnot. So I think it's important for listeners to understand that like there is a fair amount of overlap, and a lot of us, we're all kind of seeing the same thing. And a lot of times we're able to identify through evaluation very similar issues that come up, and the approach in terms of how we address that might be a little bit different, or might be particular expertise that I have as a sex therapist, that Lena, you have as an occupational therapist or pelvic floor therapist. So it sounds like you do use a very similar model, whether you call it by that or not. Like that information and suggestion piece is certainly a big part of the process.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you clarified that. I think that is really important for our listeners to understand.
Yeah. So Lena, just to like wrap things up here, this has been like super informative for me because I really did not even fully understand what occupational therapy was before this interview. So it's helpful for me to kind of have that understanding. Are there any misconceptions about occupational therapy and where it plugs in to like the world of sexual health and sexual function, sexual pain, etc.?
Yes, there are. I'm going to call you out, Mark. You did just call it pelvic floor PT, which is what we're used to hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We like to refer to it as pelvic floor therapy because you can see a PT or an OT. So even things like that we get really used to, PTs do this, and then OTs, you do activities of daily living. And I'm like, well, sex is an activity of daily living.
Right.
And this is kind of how I felt in graduate school, was like, you're saying we're supposed to be the people to do this, but I think even some professors were hesitant to dive into that. But anyways, sex is an activity of daily living, connectedness, intimacy, all of that affects our daily life, right? Affects our daily activities. And like you said, there's overlap with a lot of professions that deal with sexual health, but I think OT just isn't as widely known. I'll put it that way. OTs are incredible. The OTs that I know, especially in sexual health, you know, trailblazers in this field of sexual health and sexual medicine. And, you know, we just have to advocate for ourselves. We need to get it out there a little bit more, I think, because I think the main issue is the underrepresentation in that field. Mm-hmm. And not, which leads to not being widely known.
Yeah. I mean, it's an absolutely fair point. I wouldn't like in my head, it's pelvic floor PT.
Right.
That's always what it has been. So much so that I didn't, until I encountered you, I didn't even realize that occupational therapy was, you know, part of the bigger picture. And stuff like, I mean, it's super important for me to know, because just speaking with you, it just kind of gives me like a whole, like another angle. I didn't even realize that this was going into like an assessment phase for like pelvic, you know, which I will now call pelvic floor therapy, because I really just used to pelvic floor PT as just, again, another piece of the puzzle. So I definitely see that as a major misconception, because I never would have thought in my mind to link OT to sexual health. But now knowing what I know and understanding what an OT actually does, it could be really like an integral piece, because it sounds like with your training in particular, you also can kind of like span like the physical and the psychosocial, kind of getting that big picture look. And I think in ways that more of the medical side doesn't necessarily have the psychosocial, the psychosexual lens nearly as much. And, you know, people in my camp, like, we have, again, limited information on the medical side. But a lot of times we are coordinating, because we don't, like, we are a non-touch therapy. We don't have that skill set. So we don't get that information. We only get it in a report, or, you know, by a phone call with another provider. But I think somebody who's like in that position to be able to do both, I think could really be like a crucial piece of, you know, proper treatment of a sexual function challenge. So this has been extremely informative for me. I really, really appreciate this. Are there OTs, like pelvic floor OTs, like, is that a common practice? Like, could I find them in my area, in my region? Is that something I should be on the lookout for?
Yes, they are. We're becoming more common. I will say there are not many that treat men, but there are not many pelvic floor therapists that treat men in general.
Yeah.
But yes, we're growing. So I would look for one in your area. We're everywhere.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to do that. I appreciate that. Any recommendations that you have for any colleagues or, you know, people that you train with at various points in Maryland, I'd be happy if you would send that to me. That would be super helpful.
Maryland?
Yes, in Maryland.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. I'll absolutely send some recs your way.
Okay. I appreciate that. And once again, thank you very much for your time. This has been super informative, and I think our listeners are going to benefit from this a lot.
Yeah, I've so enjoyed talking to you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
This is great.
Thanks for listening to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. For more information on today's topic and understanding how the mind impacts erectile dysfunction, please visit erectioniq.com. That's erectioniq.com.